Welcome to episode 232 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest insight scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with my first topic, and buddy, it's earnings season, and I'm sure you've been tuned into all of this as well, but let's talk about AT&T Mobile. Both MNOs posted great results. It's generally very solid performance for AT&T from a revenue perspective. They continue to add crazy amounts of fiber subscribers. This was, what was it? However many quarters in a row of over 200,000 fiber adds, but AT&T did reach a big milestone. They surpassed 1 million fixed wireless access subscribers with their Internet Air solution. So great performance from AT&T. T-Mobile, hey, they smashed it. What can you say? Postpaid net adds, 830,000. What else? 1.7 net customer postpaid adds. Net income of over $3 billion. They grew overall services revenue by 6% year over year to almost $17.5 billion. And again, another great quarter. From my perspective, I think the upside for T-Mobile, and they'll continue to see upside, I believe, as they build their FWA business and they start focusing on fiber. But they're still continuing to build their T-Mobile for Business solutions. And I think that's an area that they can really drive some upside in. But overall, strong performance from both companies. Any thoughts on your part?
I would also say that they have been talking up some of their moment in satellite. And I know you'll cover that topic later.
Yeah.
But there was an outage that occurred with Starlink that was for a couple hours. So that was interesting. Not the greatest timing for T-Mobile, but they're also the only ones like a commercially available service that's rated by a regular satellite provider. Yeah, I think overall they've been executing really well. Fixed wireless continues to grow for them as well. And I'll be talking about some other topic later as my first topic related to T-Mobile seeking some partnerships.
Yeah. Hey, let's just make that the segue. You want to talk about Charter and Comcast and an MVNO agreement with T-Mobile?
Yes, this is pretty simple. They signed an MVNO agreement with T-Mobile, but specifically around business. So for Charter and for Comcast, they're going to be using that as their business service, which is really interesting. They both were using Verizon for the consumer businesses. It'll be really interesting to see how that works out and whether they're testing out the waters to see how T-Mobile handles it and how happy people are with T-Mobile, because there's a possibility that they could switch to T-Mobile for both down the road, which would help T-Mobile's overall profitability because they would have a lot more subscribers and more revenue. And obviously those wholesale businesses are not as profitable, but they help with scale, and T-Mobile is really pushing scale right now.
That's interesting. I know that they've offered a consumer MVNO service and then Spectrum, which has a footprint where I live in Texas. They've had a consumer offering as well. But beyond access, Anshul, is there anything that's different or unique about these business plans?
From what I can tell. I'm looking at the release right now, and it talks about expanding their leadership, delivering wireline and wireless offerings. But I don't see any specific differences between this. I have a feeling it's obviously going to have a different support structure, different price, more bundling. But yeah, I'm looking at this release here from Charter, and yeah, it really doesn't seem particularly special. It just seems like it's another MVNO deal.
Yeah, interesting. I'll have to dig into that a little bit further and figure it out. But hey, let's go to our second topic, and I think you and I will be talking about this one for quite a bit. We've got some updates on the low Earth orbit satellite space race. So news this week from both T-Mobile and AT&T. So let's talk about T-Mobile first. T-Satellite is officially generally available. That announcement was made this week. There was a blog that an executive at T-Mobile penned as well, speaking of what they're doing there. I think we've talked about the pricing in the past. It is included in some plans, but it is priced at $10 a month. And it's what's interesting. You talked about your experience with it when you went camping over Father's Day. I'm going to be taking my T-Mobile unmodified Samsung smartphone to Bryce Canyon this weekend in Utah. And I'll be doing some testing with it as well. What I'm most interested in is the usability. You know, one of the things that T-Mobile has spoken to is that they've really simplified that so that you don't have to get, you don't have to be some sort of navigator of the stars to be able to angle it in the right position to get the connection. And then certainly I want to test the speed as well there. But so that's a big announcement from T-Mobile. Now, not to be outdone, and this was timed around obviously earnings this week, AT&T and AST Space Mobile achieved a major milestone. And what that milestone involves is the first voice over LTE call and SMS text using AT&T spectrum and AT&T's core networking infrastructure. And so this is tied to the first block of AST Space Mobile's satellite constellation. And it's a great proof of concept. It proves that what they're doing is going to drive connectivity. And from my perspective, they are what behind Starlink and T-Mobile. Starlink obviously has the luxury of using SpaceX to get its birds in the air a little more quickly. And there have been some delays with AST Space Mobile. I know that they're about to perform a launch in India. You know, there have been some delays there as well, but I love this, man. From my perspective, competition raises the innovation bar, and it's just going to provide customers with more choice. So it will be interesting to see once AT&T is in production and they're in GA with their solution, how they're going to price it as well, and if that'll affect what T-Mobile does. But what do you think of both announcements this week?
I would say, for your experience, based on me having tested it already, you're not going to be able to test the speed. Okay. You're mostly going to be able to just message people. Obviously, the service is going to be different down the road, but they don't really have application support yet. So you're mostly going to be doing messaging. Okay. But you'll be able to see how fast a message is sending, how fast are they coming back. And the thing that really shocked me the most was that I was able to use it indoors. Because I was under the impression that you always have to be outdoors to use these satellite services. And I was actually getting messages in bed inside a cabin. So that was very impressive. Obviously, there's windows, so there's an opportunity for some signal to get in. But I would say otherwise, I am hoping to see AT&T and AST pick up the pace and get to a commercial launch. Because I think commercial availability allows you to figure out a lot more bugs and work through some of the challenges that exist. Like my experience on T-Mobile was not flawless. I didn't have, the first day I connected to the service, I connected to it and I never got any messages and I wasn't able to send any. And then I woke up in the morning and it was working. You know, that could have just been a lack of satellite coverage because Starlink isn't perfect either. It's not perfect global coverage. It's mostly global coverage. Yeah. So I think that coverage will be important because this satellite service is supposed to plug holes in this terrestrial cell sites.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you need to have really good coverage. Commercial availability and really good coverage are going to be very important for AT&T and AST Space Mobile to be successful in this as they compete with everybody else who's trying to move as fast as they can. Launch schedules are always a challenge and any kind of delays those tend to snowball because then you have to push back launch dates as well, which then you don't get to just pick the next day or the amount of time that you're delayed. You have to go with whatever launch schedules are available. So SpaceX definitely has opportunities there because they can fill whatever holes they want and move whatever payloads they want around.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the final thing that I'll mention for our viewers and listeners is that I am working with AST Space Mobile and AT&T when they are ready to open a beta up and allow me to do a demo. I'll probably be traveling to Midland to do that. So there's no defined timeline for that. I mean, obviously this big milestone was achieved. AST Space Mobile is working on getting its constellation in place, but my goal will be to hold back my experience and my insights from what I end up learning this weekend in Utah until I have that opportunity to also give AT&T and AST Space Mobile their due. And then, you're too young to remember this, but there was something called the Pepsi Challenge many years ago where Pepsi was actually sent a kit out with, I think it was a new version of Pepsi, in a can of Coke. And I think it included some saltine crackers to cleanse your palate. And they basically asked people to do the Pepsi Challenge comparing the two and which one you like better. So I'm going to do the Pepsi Challenge with respect to my experience with both T-Mobile Starlink and AT&T and AST Space Mobile. So stay tuned, viewers and listeners, for that. Without further ado, Let's go to your second topic, buddy. And you want to talk about Microsoft's new Surface 5G
laptop? Yes, the Surface 5G is a business laptop. It's specifically designed for portable use. It actually weighs the same as the Surface Laptop 7, but this is specifically being called the Surface Laptop 5G. And one of the big reasons why it's being called that is it actually has a dynamic antenna system with 6 strategically placed antennas that allow to adjust based on where the signal is coming from, but also so that you can use the laptop as a hotspot. So it's really, and laptops in general are better for 5G signal because you have a lot more space to fit antennas and you'll get better signal indoors. And they said that this laptop both supports eSIM and NanoSIM. Mm-hmm. And it weighs under 3 pounds, which is the same weight as the Surface Laptop 7. So they managed to basically get it in the same weight as a regular Surface Laptop, but with 5G capabilities. And I asked them, they told me it's a Snapdragon X62 modem, but they did some custom software capabilities built in to make it easier to switch between 5G and Wi-Fi, make it a much smoother user experience. And then on top of that, they've also pre-certified it and tested it on Verizon's network specifically to be more capable of AI using 5G and just having Copilot Plus and Microsoft 365 Copilot and just having fast connectivity. So this was like a pre-qualified device on Verizon's network. But as far as I know, it'll work on all networks. This was just a partnership that they built. And then on top of that, it will be available starting August 26th. So it's about a month from now. And yeah, it's like I get very excited about 5G PCs. I'm currently using a Dell and a HP that are both 5G PCs. I am very deep into the 5G PC ecosystem. And yeah, I'm excited to get my hands on this one. There's a chance that it might end up being my daily laptop because I really cannot live without a 5G PC. It's hard for me to deal with Wi-Fi when I know that 5G is a better experience because you and I both go with a lot of clients and visit them on site and having to deal with their corporate networks and getting all the passwords.
Guest Wi-Fi, yeah.
It's guest Wi-Fi. And then for anybody who's, you know, road warrior or any kind of executive who needs to meet with people, being at coffee shops or using any kind of unsecured Wi-Fi network is just an instant no-go for me or anyone that I would recommend that has sensitive data. So I'm excited about this laptop. It seems really cool. And yeah, it is an Intel-based system. It's not a Qualcomm-based system. So it's an Intel CPU, Qualcomm modem. Because Intel got out of the modem business and it doesn't seem like they're even doing the MediaTek partnership anymore. It seems like Microsoft wanted to use a Qualcomm modem, which makes sense because they do have Qualcomm SoC-based 5G modem Surface Pros.
So I got 2 questions for you on this because I'm super intrigued. So is it an AI PC or not?
It is because it uses an Intel Core Ultra 2 series. So that's Lunar Lake. That means it has more than a 40 TOPS NPU. So it's a Copilot Plus PC through and through, but it also has a 5G modem with Qualcomm Snapdragon. And it's not just the Surface Laptop 5G. They're also adding more laptops as well, like the Surface Laptop 13 and the Surface Pro 12, which are available today. So yeah, it's they expanded the portfolio and they added the 5G laptop.
Okay, awesome. My second question for you, because you really intrigued me on this one, the dynamic antenna intuition, say that fast three
attenuation
times.
Yeah.
How does that work? I'm assuming most antennas in 5G notebooks are built into the outer bevel of the screen. How are they dynamically adjusting?
The way you would do a dynamically tuned antenna system is you put more antennas than you need.
Okay.
So you have 6 antennas, but you're only using 2 or 3 at a time. But you use the antenna based on the signal that has the best signal.
I see.
And that way, if you have dormant antennas, you can also use those for transmit. You could theoretically receive and transmit and not have to like lower the throughput or shift over to an antenna that you're half using. This is really about improving stability, improving performance, but also enabling mobile hotspot capabilities without ham-fisting the rest of the system.
Got it. Yeah. I didn't assume that there was like a physical antenna movement within the notebook. It's software driven, but that's interesting. So you have additional antennas. So
yeah, it says with 6 strategically placed antennas, the device automatically adjusts signal paths and power based on how it's being held or used, ensuring strong, reliable connection and exactly where it's needed.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to look into that, man. I love the weight. I love that capability. And I love just the fact that it's a 5G PC. Very cool, my friend. Hey, I'm going to hit my third and final topic very quickly here. I just wanted to share my recent experience when I spent time at my home in the Florida Keys with respect to connectivity. I do have an AT&T Internet Air, a demo unit that I'm testing out in Isla Mirada. I've had generally great performance. It's what you would expect with 5G FWA. I'll also add that my condo was built in the late and is constructed of concrete block and a lot of rebar because that meets hurricane standards. And it's been really great. But, and I'll make this statement for all the carriers, as you move further south to the southernmost point in Key West, even though you see cell tower along Overseas Highway, the performance is really, really inconsistent from my perspective. And what really magnifies the issue is when you're somewhere like Key West, which is the southernmost point, you do have cell towers there. You've got a military installation there. You have the Coast Guard. You have the Navy. And you have a lot of businesses. You have a lot of, as you would guess, in Key West, a lot of bars and a lot of restaurants. And it was interesting. I was spending time at one of my favorite places, and the point of sale machine wasn't working properly. And so I asked the bartender, hey, what's going on? It's like, this is actually on cellular and it's just hit or miss. And it's been this way for years. And, you know, it really got me thinking. And I had a similar epiphany a few years ago when I spent time there for the 4th of July. And I watched all of the cellular Stripe point of sale devices bomb out and people couldn't buy food and beverage and that sort of thing. It's not the end of the world, man. This is a first world problem. But when you think about it, when you think about like a place like Key West that caters to visitors, that caters to people that want to go have great food and have a few drinks, sometimes too many drinks, like my Pilar rum. But you've really got to do more to improve the connectivity from my perspective. I did weigh in on this a few weeks ago when I shared some insights around the lack of connectivity and how that potentially affected the alerting tied to the very tragic flooding in the Texas Hill Country. But if you sort of look at what's happening in Key West and parts of the lower Florida Keys, with this patchy bridge, it's potentially a danger when it comes to like hurricane evacuation and alerts there. And then when you look at the impact on tourism, when you look at the potential impact on commercial fishing, now the military is operating, I'm sure they have their own private networks in the area. But it, for me, it just reiterates the importance of a mobile network operator stepping up, maybe over-investing initially. And certainly when you look at what AT&T has done with building its fiber footprint, John Stankey, AT&T CEO, will say, we are over-investing in a lot of places that are also underserved because we believe it's the right thing to do. And honestly, it's good for business because they're building the infrastructure that's going to pay dividends down the road. And John cracked me up last time I saw him. He told me, the person that replaces me better be sending me a fruit basket every Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah because of what I've done to do that. And so I think there is an opportunity, whether it's AT&T or T-Mobile or Verizon, to really step up and invest in the infrastructure in my second home to address all of these things. And I'll just finally leave with this note. The Key West International Airport recently opened with some much needed innovations. And hey, Key West International Airport still doesn't have a public Wi-Fi network. Work on that. I know that AT&T has worked with DFW Airport that I fly through almost daily, given as much travel onshore as you and I do. And so let's get creative, Key West International Airport. Go partner with an AT&T or a T-Mobile or a Verizon to get that Wi-Fi installed. So anyway, I know that's my personal story and you probably don't have a lot to add, but anything you want to say? Okay, go for it.
I'm looking at Key West and the Keys in general, and I'm thinking, why aren't there any undersea cables driving more connectivity?
Good point. I believe there are. Yeah.
But I think that there's some national preserves there that might make that more difficult.
The coral reef is actually dying. And so there's a lot of focus on not disturbing the ecosystem there. But that's a good point.
So that's something to consider. But also, I'm curious as to how much of your experience has been on T-Mobile. And the reason why I asked that question is because they just invested that $2 billion in Florida. And I'm wondering how much of that $2 billion ended up in the Keys. Maybe you can go down with that T-Mobile device you've got yeah. and see what the experience is like versus your other carriers. I'm always carrying AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. So I'm always testing all three carriers everywhere I go. But that was just a thought that I had.
Yeah. I have had a demo device down there, but you're right. It's been mostly AT&T. So that's a great idea. Just like I'm going to do the Pepsi challenge with the Leo satellite services. I'll take that same demo down there and run it through its paces. So very good point. But hey, bud, let's get to your third and final topic. And we're going to close. We've been talking a lot about T-Mobile. It wasn't by design, but you do want to talk about what they're doing. And they're a first with respect to using L4F.
Yes. So this is a topic that we have talked about before, but it is now commercially available and ready for deployment. So this is L4S. This is a technology that is part of the Release 18, also known as 5G Advanced standard. It's not actually a new technology. It's actually technology that's existed for a while. It's already been implemented by cable operators like Comcast and also by NVIDIA with their GeForce Now game streaming service. So it's very much about improving the streaming experience for users, whether that's video packets, XR, gaming, whatever it might be. It's specifically designed to lower the latency and anticipate network congestion before it happens, as opposed to reacting. So it's much more of a proactive service rather than a reactive one, but it's dynamic and always paying attention to network conditions and ensuring that packets don't drop as much and that the fastest packet goes and takes the best route possible. This was something that T-Mobile actually brought me in for, and I did some videos for them. And I'm actually part of the announcement that T-Mobile made with CTO John Saw. So I wanted to talk about that because it's an announcement that happened late last week, early this week, but also it's something that I was involved in and something that I've been covering and paying attention to for quite some time. And I wanted to make people aware of it, that they are the first carrier, unlikely to be the last. But because they have a 5G advanced network already, they can deploy it. And they were actually, part of the video was also talking to or about a partner called Vay, who does a remote service that brings you a self-driving vehicle so you can drive it yourself wherever you want. It's very similar to what Halo was doing, where they basically have someone teleoperate a car, drive it to you, and that teleoperation is what they're doing, what they're enabling. It's really cool stuff. I'm very excited that this is actually something that's like commercially available, which means developers can take advantage of it. If you know, have a game streaming service and want to connect it to a 5G, it'll run a lot better than if they just didn't have this.
Yeah. And so you did mention that L4S is actually part of the 5G Advanced Release 18 standard, right?
Correct.
Okay, cool. And then obviously you have to have a standalone network to get to 5G Advanced. So yeah.
Correct.
So it's no surprise that the T-Mobile's first out of the gate. But I would expect that AT&T is going to follow suit as well as Verizon once they get to their nationwide coverage with 5G SA. But good stuff. I didn't realize that you had spent time with John. John's a great guy. We may be spending some time with him and the team in the not so distant future as well. But hey, buddy, it's been another great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide specific feedback or insights on a specific 5G topic for future podcasts, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at WillTownTech. And I'm Anshel. And we hope you have a great weekend. And please tune in again next week. And don't forget to rate and subscribe.